This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I will hereby call to order the second meeting of the Erie County Sumitomo Task Force. Just for purposes, everyone I think was here last time except for Quinn Bushin. So if you'd like to introduce yourself so people know who's here.
So I'm Quinn McMahon. I'm the Department of Labor Commissioner's Western New York Regional Representative.
Thank you, Quinn. I appreciate everyone's attendance. We don't have exactly everyone in the room that appeared last time. But we do have some information, and I'll be also turning it over to Zach Evans to talk a little bit more about a workforce update that we have from the Workforce and Training Snapshot Report on Sumitomo, was prepared by Jackie Hall from Workforce Buffalo. Does everyone have a copy of that?
No, but I can distribute this. This was an internal report following up on the county executive's request at the first meeting on some preliminary workforce data in terms of training, who's been in jobs, who's found jobs. And I know Quinn and I discussed after the last meeting how quickly we could get accurate data, and it seems like DOL is churning through that. So I don't know, I'll turn it over to Quinn first, and then I can make sure I distribute this copy to everyone on the task force afterwards.
So we have some of the Sumitomo individuals registered with our Rapid Response Program, but the exact numbers of how many have been placed in jobs, reported new employment, and have retired aren't exact as yet, so I will try and get those for the next meeting that we have, but there are about around 600 or more registered for our Rapid Response Program with DOL.
Okay, great.
The information that was presented noted that in 2024, 316 Sumitomo workers filed unemployment claims. In 2025, there were three additional, 238 of those that certified for benefits, indicated they're still seeking employment. There was only one individual officially retired, recorded as retired. And the active New York State Department of Labor caseload was 321 customers, so we are talking about a much smaller portion of those that were actually affected. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that means that those other individuals found work, are searching for work, not searching for work. They did receive a generous severance package from Sumitomo, and I'm not certain if every one individual who received the severance package immediately sought additional employment. This is why when we talked about trying to identify where individuals are in the employment pipeline, are they seeking unemployment benefits, not, it was going to be difficult to narrow it down. And we do have some good numbers, but they're indicative that less than half of the individuals who are affected have actually sought assistance from New York State at this point.
Mark Rich's comment, I think part of that is because the way that severance package, when we negotiated, was set up, if they would have filed for unemployment within so many days of their last day at work, they would have, and then were receiving the severance aid, they would have lost their unemployment. So there was a delay at least till January 11th for anybody that wanted to get the unemployment and the severance. They had to delay that application. So that could be why the numbers are looking so low with the unemployment. The benefits rep and the union president as part of the severance agreement are staying on for a year. So I can get with the benefits rep and probably get some pretty good numbers from what the guys are saying and gals when they're coming into the office. And I can share them.
Yeah, Jim, on that front, last time you talked about, and I think we talked about afterwards, I know the county executive and I did, sort of the the folks who might have taken an early retirement, the folks who, likely those with families or other obligations like that, immediately, you know, pounded the pavement and got to work, and then some other, that sort of third bucket of folks that might be reassessing, reevaluating. Are those between you and Denise, has that changed? Is that still sort of how things stand, or what other information have you heard on the ground?
Yeah, I mean, there's a group of people, so you understand, there's a group of people that are eligible to retire.
Mm-hmm.
But you're probably going to see them take the severance and the unemployment benefit, because if they go into retirement, then the retiree health insurance calls for a contribution by the employee. If they stay out of that and take the severance and the unemployment, they get not only the health insurance, but the dental and the vision fully paid for the company for a year. So that's going to kind of determine what people do. And, you know, we try to educate them on the best path, and I think a lot of them are following that. So that's probably part of the reason for what we're seeing.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Based on the information that Dr. Hall provided us, there's some who have been employed in other locations that they're aware of. There's nine individuals from eight different employees, ranging from Moog, a hydraulic tech at $42 an hour, to delivery driver for TOPS. So there's individuals who have already sought additional employment or other employment. As I said, this was always going to be really difficult to identify on a case-by-case basis, but at least we're starting to see that some people are reentering the workforce, others are not, and the information you provided, Jim, indicates that it's probably going to continue like that for the next few months.
I think those that were at the bottom with less years of employment have sought employment. We did talk with mm-hmm. a few that are at Millbone, a couple have gone over to...
I think we've got, last I heard, six at the Conway and the DuPont plant.
Yep.
I think there's four at Olin. There's two at Goodyear and Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
So our facility, we can get a pretty good idea. There's interviews at Special Metals in Dunkirk for maintenance people. I was there yesterday, in fact, and they gave me some names and asked me. Usually if you give me a name, and I don't want to send a paper and TV, but if you give me a name and I don't know, it's probably a pretty good boy.
I think
my job.
the one thing that has come out of it, at least in the last few months, is this was a bad occurrence. None of us were happy about it. It wasn't devastating like Bethlehem Steel closing and tens of thousands of employees not being able to find work and the impact elsewhere. This has certainly had a negative impact on the families and others that rely on it, but at least it wasn't as devastating as it could have been. And I am glad to hear that some other individuals have found work. Any other discussion on this? Because I think we do want to move also to something that's really pressing, which is the building and what information you may have, Tom.
One last question for Quinn or anyone on the labor front. I know those job fairs, we all attended them and they were just knockout successes, and I know talking to people, they said, oh yeah, there were offers made right on the spot. Will DOL labor or DOL data in your number crunching capture those?
Yes.
Okay, so that's
that
coming.
When we do the job fairs, that's when the individuals register for our rapid response programs. Mm-hmm. When a WAR notice goes out, our rapid response team reaches out to every affected employee three times. So there's some that just don't respond to the rapid response and don't get involved with those services, but those that do register for rapid response, which is around 600, maybe a little bit more, those are the ones that we're able to kind of track and follow. So I know that there are around 300 that are currently working with DOL to get those resume building services, job placement services, and then the others will be able to track as well. So as long as they're registered for rapid response, that's how we more accurately can track those. And many of those employees do come from the job fairs, but it is all of the employees that are offered the rapid response from DOL. And one other thing too, I know that there have been 10 employees who have joined a Carpenters 276 job training program.
Great.
And three have actually already graduated, so there were 13 total. 10 are currently in the training program that's multidisciplinary, and there'll be some job opportunities from there. I think three of them are currently working on solar farms, and then the other 10 that are going through it, will some will get apprenticeship opportunities, but they'll all be union jobs as well with Carpenters 276.
Thank you. Yes, the information we'll share with everyone, this information from Dr. Hall indicates 15 individuals are attending BOCES training and CNC machining, HVAC. There's a lot of information here, but I just want to commend everybody for their response, because it's quite apparent that some people found employment, others are being trained for new careers, and careers that are definitely in demand, and we're going to continue to help them as best as we can.
Would you see anything from the ICD on that?
I don't have that right now, but I can look into it.
Yeah, because I know when we did the kind of the severance package, there was over $250,000 in ICD funds, and we negotiated that they stay in there, employees could use them, set a limit per employee. But I know a lot of employees, I know at least from last time I heard 15 to 18 have applied for the CDL training through the ICD. So when I check with Josh, I'll see if he can update you on that.
Okay.
Moving on, I want to talk about Invest Buffalo Niagara and the RFP that is was being prepared with regards to the premises and finding a partner for it. It's Tom,
I'm going to
or
turn
Matt.
Over to Matt for to discuss the process.
Matt, why don't you come up here and so we can hear you too.
You're a person too, buddy.
You spoiled. He's done a great job with in short order of taking.
Why don't you go over here so that we're
pretty
up.
Complicated situation and getting us close to the finish line here. So go ahead, Matt.
Sure. Hi. Matthew Hubacher, Senior Vice President with Invest Buffalo Niagara. So working with the county executive and the task force team, we prepared a request for proposal for a feasibility study for the redevelopment of the Sumitomo plant at 10 Sheridan Drive. That RFP was distributed to over 300 contacts in the real estate advisory, site selection, real estate community on January 16th. There is a landing page at our website, info.buffaloniagara.org/RFP, where interested parties can download the RFP. Responses are due back next Friday, March 14th at 4 p.m.
What is the timeline after receiving responses in which the committee thinks they will be hiring a partner?
Yes. Mr. County Executive, we will collect those proposals that are submitted through next Friday. We will have members of the task force review those proposals and ultimately select a firm or firms who will meet with the task force scoring committee in person to deliver a final overview of their proposal, with the goal of having a firm selected by the end of April.
How is the have we received a significant amount of inquiries or questions with regards to it?
We have received several inquiries and questions regarding the RFP, including several dozens downloads of the RFP from our website.
I had occasion to be in Albany a couple weeks ago at the state council meeting, where I had a chance to talk to a number of local or regional businesses that were interested in partnering with national interests, everything from demolition to utility construction and everything in between. And also we have raised the BSD is footing the bill for this, and we very much appreciate that. They will have input into the selection of the consultant. We anticipate that we'll have some of the top firms in the world that they have already talked to us about it. So it's how they put together the team to accomplish something this complicated in such a short amount of time that's going to be the trick. But have had conversations with both GoSemi and the Tech Hub at the highest levels to say, you know, this could be a template up and down the thruway for us to not be taking up big swaths of green land and sprawl, if we can find ways to have a site control and adequate resources for adaptive reuse of these facilities. So we got it on the radar of some of the highest levels of head of BSD, And then additionally, I was in Washington last week and had occasion to talk to several of our legislative delegation at the federal level, not from an advocacy standpoint, but just from an information standpoint. And I pointed out how important the Tech Hub initiative is to our community and our future, and how sites like this could play a critical role, and how long it would take in current conditions to try and recreate the infrastructure for power that surround and are directly feeding some of these sites. So we're trying to cover all the bases here, and I think some of the questions that were asked were really very pointed, and they want to know that we're serious about this, and we indicated that we were, and so we'll see you next Friday.
I don't think there's ever a good time for a closure of a plant like this. Maybe we got a little lucky with the issues of the Tech Hub and what's happening in the next few years, so it gives us more opportunity than maybe if this had happened 10 years ago. But I'm looking forward to hearing about the responses and choosing a partner so that we can move forward. Any other questions on the RFP or that process? Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, sir.
We do have some other major issues with the site, of course, and we talked a lot about it last time with water, so we want to open it up for discussion with regards to these other site issues and the property matters. I don't know if the supervisor has any additional information they'd like to share or others.
Thank you, County Executive. There's really not too much more, you know, going on the raw water side. We're still meeting and we're having done our basis of design. That's what we're working on now. That's probably another, I'm going to say, 2 months away, you know, to be completed, two months away to be completed. We are finding out that there's a lot of underground utilities, easements on the Huntley site that are making it a little problematic to get the water from Huntley site over to our industries. But our engineering firm said that they don't think it's anything that they can't work around. They just got to go to Plan B instead of going through Plan A. So we're working with ESD primarily with, and I can never remember Jeff's last name.
Januszewski.
Yeah, rolls right up. So I always just say Jeff.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to know.
If it was a German name, it would have been fine. A Polish name.
Calling him Jeff would be the nicest thing.
I did meet with Jeff in Albany about 3 weeks ago, and we are working through the governor's office and ESD, and we're plowing through on that. The industries themselves, 3M and Evonik, we're keeping them in the loop. We were meeting with them. DuPont is still up in the air with what they're going to do. We've set a timetable for them because we got to move forward with our project, and we're waiting to hear back from them on what they're going to do. All the industries have potable water available to them, so they can use potable water. Which is more costly for them, obviously, than the untreated raw water. GM actually is not using their water intakes, their raw water, taking it from the Niagara River. They are using town. They went to town using town potable water about 6 months ago.
Did they say why?
What's that?
Did they say why?
No, I didn't say why. And that's after putting, I'm going to say easily, $10 million into their water intakes over the last 5 years. If I could figure that out, I wouldn't be sitting in this room. But we're moving forward with the project. We're also moving forward with our eminent domain on the Huntley site. Everything's kind of tied in together with that. They've exhausted all of their legal course, NRG has. So now it's just, when does the town when is the town going to be ready to take the property over? And we're not going to take it over until we're ready. You know, we got to have everything in order. The raw water project has to be in line, obviously, and then we'll pull the trigger on that. So, pretty much status quo, unfortunately.
Any other comments or questions with regards to other site property matters?
My one question for you, Supervisor, is have you, when's the last time you spoke to 3M? Because I know they, on the immediate waterfront, they're the ones that we're sort of most worried about because they were co-opting Sumitomo's water. I know they've got the agreement for Sumitomo to pay them. Have they expressed to you any concerns after that 6 months window if they have to keep paying for potable?
Our water and sewer people who are the point persons on this, they have talked to 3M, and to the best of my knowledge, they have not brought up any issue regarding that. I think that, you know, as we know, Sumitomo offered to that 6 month window, you know, to pay for the difference of the potable and non-potable water to 3M. So that's something that, funny you should bring it up now, because I had a phone call this morning with someone kind of along the same lines. We have to reach out to 3M.
Okay.
I didn't get into that. We got to reach out to 3M and we got to ask them what their plans are.
Okay.
There's a window, the clock is ticking.
Without revealing any state secrets, Ken or others, I know you have a relationship with Sumitomo. They do indicate that they're going to be on site for at least a full year.
They haven't given us any time frame. I mean, the only thing I can say is they're still an existing customer of ours. They are still consuming electricity. And that's about as far as I can go. It's obviously at a reduced level than where they were previously when they were in production.
The one advantage of having them there, still utilizing electricity and others, is it's not just like they shut the doors, put a lock on it, and now things are falling apart.
Correct.
So whatever the long-term viability of the site is, will at least be in hopefully better shape than if an employer just closed the doors and left, because there's somebody still there managing the facility. We don't have an exact timeline, to my knowledge, as to when they do plan on saying this is it, we're done, and then we have to work on the issues associated with site acquisition in the meantime. So, as we all know, when that day comes, hopefully we, in the group that is formed, will have the site as compared to some third party that comes in.
I was told earlier this week that there's a group of people who are going to be there at least, and I think they might be the last people who are going to be there. They're going to be there until, I think, the end of October. That's when they're going to get their severance package.
Okay.
Yeah, and kind of executive, to your point, in my conversation with Sumitomo, it's not like they've, at least to me, relayed a specific drop-dead or out date. It's been this sort of soft, at one point 12, then 18, then back to 12 months. So I think as this gets closer, you're exactly right, we should try and get an exact firm date from them so we can prepare accordingly.
As we know, once a building is closed, it doesn't take very long for it to start to deteriorate if it's not heated and electrified and the issues that pop up are addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Any other discussion on the property matters?
Well, we should. I don't know if they're going to just, I would hope that they're going to keep the building heated, you know, Sumitomo. I mean, I don't think they're going to, because that, you know, it's an asset for them still, the building. I mean, I would think that they would. I don't think they're going to walk away and shut off all the utilities. You can ask that of Glenn.
Find out.
But I'd be very surprised if they did that.
Thank you, Supervisor. Note for the record, we've joined by the Assembly Member, William Conrad. I don't know if you had anything. We've gone through a number of items. We're actually kind of on finishing up the property matters, but I'm not certain if there's anything you wanted to add with regards to your discussions or what's been going on with regards to Sumitomo.
I apologize, I was in conference on Zoom, so I was in my car. I apologize. Making sure that we need less New York in our budget.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just wanted to make sure that, you know, our end, and discussed last time when we went through the tour, and we talked about the property aspects and making sure if there's anything that we need to do and keep the pressure on. I know I've talked with the governor's staff directly on making this a priority, especially water projects and so on, that will continue the lifeblood of this area. So just making sure that we keep on top of things.
Thank you. The broader economic climate, I think everyone was sort of dreading the unemployment report that was going to come out for December, and it really wasn't that bad. But I think it's also indicative of that, based on unemployment claims, there were a lot less in unemployment claims that were filed with regards to Sumitomo than what we expected. We expected nearly 1,000 or more, and it turns out there were a little over 300. So the impact, at least directly, has not have seemed to have had that impact that we were worried about. As noted, a significant portion of the Sumitomo employees reside in Erie. A significant portion reside in Niagara, and there's some that reside in other counties too. So it's not as if this was just limited to Erie County. But the impact is, at least with regards to the unemployment rate, hasn't really been seen yet, and maybe it won't be if individuals do end up getting other jobs. I'll turn it over to Karen and Quinn to talk a little bit more, but in general, our unemployment rate has been fairly steady. It's not the lowest it's ever been, but it's actually pretty good for this time of year, and I believe the 2024 December numbers were better than the 2023 December numbers, and there's lots of jobs out there. It's not a lack of jobs. It's certainly, when Bethlehem Steel closed in 83, and I remember the impact on my family, there were not jobs in this region to fulfill the need for those who lost it. It's a little different now. The pay scale may be different than what individuals had at Sumitomo, but the economic climate still appears to be strong. So I don't know if you wanted to add anything.
Generally speaking, yeah, we still are talking to businesses in our five county region that are coming to us looking for help with expansions. We have there are still lots of jobs available. We have 1 year under our belt of our Western New York Manufacturing Tech Workforce Coalition that has been helping to provide an organized training platform for workers that are interested in jobs in manufacturing and tech, and we'll have a report ready in within a month on how our first year has gone. But we are still seeing opportunity. There are lots of jobs available, and we're hoping that the displaced workers from Sumitomo will be able to be moving in that direction. Our coalition is considering the idea of having a job placement event for the non-labor workers, the engineers, technicians, bookkeepers, those kinds of folks that we have employers in our coalition that may be interested in participating. So we've started those discussions. We have a coalition council meeting the end of next week where that will be one of the topics we'll be discussing, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to put something together for those workers as well.
Anyone else want to discuss on that topic or that matter? First of all, I want to commend everybody for all the effort that was put in from the announcement date to where we are today. As we said, there have been numerous job fairs, numerous engagement of individuals working at Sumitomo who were affected by the layoffs, the discussions with Sumitomo about the property, the actions that have been taken. So when got a little thing stuck in my throat. I think it's a leftover. when finally Sumitomo shuts off the lights and leaves, we can actually hopefully utilize that property immediately thereafter. So I think it's a testament to the people in this room and the ones that you're affiliated with, your teams, that we are in this position that we're in. It's good to see that a significant portion of the Sumitomo workforce is working in other jobs, in what appears to be permanent jobs. Others are being trained. That was always the goal of this task force and others, was to assist those that had a life-shaking experience by finding out that the location that they either worked for many years or planned for working for many years, was their job was gone. And I just want to thank everybody for the good work. This does not mean, of course, that we're done. We're going to have additional meetings going forward. But I think we're moving in the right direction, at least with assisting the individuals who are directly affected, as well as addressing the long-term needs of the community of Tonawanda and that property. So it is used by the right type of economic development in our community and not one that will hurt us. I will note, I was in Washington myself last week, and I was attending a discussion on economic development. And this is something that I think we're aware of in this region, but one of the discussions were, you don't want data centers. You do not want data centers. They sound great. They may pay some taxes, but they use a lot of electricity. They often sometimes draw a lot of water for cooling. They're noisy, and they don't have a whole lot of jobs associated with it. And we know that's a fear of that location because of its electricity load, the size of it. We don't want a data center. We want many, many people employed there in the future. The connection with the tech hub will be huge, and I think we'll draw people to that site. But first, we got to get it. We got to get access to it and have it. I was commenting to a friend of mine who was attending the meeting, and they were sort of interested in data centers. Is like, take what you heard from those other communities that have them. You don't want data centers. It's not a benefit.
So just on that point, there have been a couple of additional expressions of interest. The world seems to think that Matt is in charge of the facility.
Yeah, good for you.
That is not the case.
You lucky duck.
He's the new chair.
Better Matt than me.
There's a bad game of telephone going on.
But Matt and I are marveling because we've been hearing about for like the last 6 months the effect of AI on site selection and you know, that kind of thing. And we've seen a couple come across and it's like, this looks a little fishy. Mm-hmm. And so that's just adding to, you know, the confusion of trying to put together a cogent approach here and have good quality consultants working on this. It's just that it's going to be a lot more confusing as the tech hub moves along, and there's, you know, when you get we get some of these leads that are requesting more power than the entire city of Buffalo. Yeah, those are kind of, so very interesting time.
Mm-hmm. I think we have to keep in mind, because I think County Executive brings up a good point, how we remand the plant and the quality of the jobs is important. I think what we're not seeing now, you gotta remember, if somebody had 3 days working in that plant under the severance package, they got $11,000. Okay, which isn't a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, but they also are getting unemployment and they're getting other things. So even if they went and got a job and they're making a little less, they're supplementing the difference to provide for their family the way they provided for at Sumitomo. I don't think you're going to see the real economic impact on the community until midsummer to fall, when that money starts running out. Because, you know, you got some people in there, you know, that got over $100,000. You know, most of them are going to retire. So the severance package was based on, you know, so many weeks for years of service. And I think right now there's a lot of people out there and that are working in an environment that is paying them less, some of them half of what they were making, that are supplementing their family needs by the severance. You're really going to see the effects of family life and the economic hit on the community after that money runs out. You know, we've seen the money during the time of COVID, and we had that influx of money coming in, and everything looked good at a bad time, and I think that's what's going to happen here. I think, you know, I said it before, I'll say it again, we were able, through the union, to take a terrible situation, make it bad, and try and get people from point A to point B. But the truth is, if the plan isn't remanded, whatever happens in 6 to 9 months from now is going to be the new Western New York or Tonawanda. I don't want to put the song Tonawanda because they didn't all come from here. The plant just has to be located here. But that's what we're really going to feel. We're not feeling it now because there's money. And we got to be thinking about that.
I think we also have to understand there are 512,000 people employed in Erie and Niagara County as of December of 2024. We're not talking about 50,000 people who lost their jobs. It's going to be, it is very detrimental. I don't want to demean anything associated with the individuals who lost their jobs, but we're not talking about the crisis situations we saw when 20,000 or 10,000, depending on the employer, if it was back in the 80s, Bethlehem Steel and then Republic Steel literally closed up shop within a couple of years. GM had 3,000 to 4,000 more employees than they have right now. So we have a very diversified economy. One of the keys I think we've all worked on was to ensure that we were not just a blue-collar economy like we once were. We are going to see some impacts, but on the overall economic indicators of the community, it's not the same as it used to be when we're talking about 1,000 individuals who are affected in a community that has over 500,000 people employed. I like looking at the unemployment figures as compared to some of the job total. I learned from the Department of Labor folks early on, John Slanker, the retired Department of Labor representative, that the job data is not necessarily indicative about the number of people who are working, because you could have one person doing two jobs and the two jobs will each indicate as a separate job in the job data, but the unemployment figures are accurate because that's the actual number of people who are employed versus those that are unemployed. As I said, this was not devastating, thankfully. I think there is going to be continued impact, especially as it relates to the individuals who are affected on it. But I don't want anybody leaving here thinking that our community is in much far worse shape economically than it was before the Sumitomo closure. I think it shows the strength of having a diversified economy, is that when you do have a diversified economy, it allows us to handle these sudden negative actions, be able to put the programs in place to train individuals, to find other jobs for them. When growing up in Lackawanna, it was a building, it was the only building that was literally built in the 1980s, and it was built by the New York State Department of Labor, but it wasn't known as the Department of Labor Office, it was the Unemployment Office. That's what it was called. Everyone called it the Unemployment Office. That's where everyone who lost their job went to file for unemployment and to go search for jobs, try to get other ones. Thankfully, we did not need to build a new unemployment office in the town of Tonawanda because of the actions that we have here. But I do want to just note, I think you'll continue to see, but it's nowhere near as impactful as some of the job losses in the past. And I'm glad to see that other individuals are being rehired right away because of what is otherwise a strong economy. Can it be better? Yes, can always be better. We are not seeing the impact in 2024-25 as they did in 83 and 84, and a lot of the reason is because of the strength of our economy and the jobs that are available. Simple as that. There's a lot of jobs out there, including those that pay pretty good money. Just got to make sure that we connect those individuals who lost a job with the jobs that are out there.
Oh, I think that goes to, that we unions meet together, that the Central Labor Council has, organized meetings, and we're there and we can make these announcements, and at the same time other unions are looking out for union members, mm-hmm. and coordinating efforts to try and bring people into, the work sites that are unionized as well.
Good. Are there any other discussions we need to talk about today?
Just anecdotally in our conversations from early on, the Japanese consulate has reached out to me to finally have a meeting after a lot of planning. So we're going to have a sit down in Albany and have a discussion about what happened and why. How do we think about legislation that affects Western New York and decisions that are made? That's a big impact in my role here. There's lots of things that are coming out from the CLCPA, and we have to take a good look at the unintended consequences of those as we make those decisions.
Anyone else? I know that it was not easy scheduling the state, and we weren't able to get everyone because of just schedules and so forth. We will, of course, have another meeting in the next
probably aim for April. February being a short month, I think, also threw some stuff. I think for the time being, monthly, just to make sure we keep having momentum, even if they're shorter meetings. So myself or someone else in our office will recirculate that same thread about scheduling the next one. And I will take Dr. Hall's report and distribute it to the group as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Let's continue the good work.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.